Now, here's something on the minds of the Takeaway Gang this week, staff, friends, and listeners.
This is Catherine in Dallas, Texas. Male and female athletes are held to different standards when it comes to their looks. Male athletes are lionized for the rugged, masculine, gladiator-type looks, scars and all. But female athletes are shamed if they look like anything less than perfect Barbie dolls.
This conversation comes out of a lot of thoughtful consideration of the events of the last week in which the U.S. women's soccer team won the World Cup. They are not Barbie dolls, but they are quite likely familiar with what Catherine there is talking about. Last week, Serena Williams won Wimbledon for the sixth time. A Barbie doll she is not, which is something that Serena is both aware of and has spoken about in the past. The New York Times spoke to her about the subject of body image in a story last week that a large number of people thought was yet another tacit endorsement of this double standard for women. Sports editor at the Times, Jason Stallman, defended the story, and you'll hear him speak about the criticism he has received in a few minutes. Here he tries to say that body image is a subject that athletes talk about all the time for all kinds of reasons.
All of these players do think a great deal about their bodies, both for image reasons, but also for how it allows them to play their sport. And Serena explained that she stays away from weights because she feels like she gets bulked up. Her muscles are big enough without weight training that if she did hit the weights, it would be excessive. And she works with other things like, you know, stretching bands, and she feels that that's a better training technique for her. And this is, you know, this is why, among the reasons I think writing about athletes' bodies is an important thing, because in sports, the athlete's body is important, right? All the time. That is their main tool. So whether it's, you know, a baseball pitcher's shoulder or a javelin thrower's hands or a tennis player's legs, like, these are the tools of the trade, and the athletes themselves take them quite seriously and spend a lot of time shaping them and stretching them and making them the best they possibly can for their sport. And it's interesting to hear them talk about that.
But are some athletes under pressure to keep their tools from being the best for their sport because it would look bad in the mirror or not meet some other criteria of beauty? Pulak Panir says muscle is good only up to a point.
I'm pretty petite, so I definitely am cautious of the amount of weight that I put on the bars and stuff. I'm happy with a comfortable weight and lifting and getting tone, but I don't necessarily do the prescribed, you know, extreme weights here. I just think for my size, I would look a little off.
We caught up with Pulak Panir at a CrossFit gym in Manhattan, but at a gym on 6th Avenue in New York City, Vanessa has no problem with strength.
I'm not afraid to put on some muscle because in real life, in science, having muscle on your body helps to burn fat and keeps you healthy for a longer amount of time, and I want to live as long as possible.
I've never avoided any particular exercise for fear of it making me look muscular. I mean, I like the muscles that I have, but I still have curves.
Allison Badarsky there is a trainer at the Black Box CrossFit Gym on 28th Street in Manhattan. She represents an evolution of body image to a place where there is no apparent contradiction between muscle and curves.
When I put my uniform on, I feel a very specific way about my body. Like, oh, like my arms look very muscly right now because, like, I'm carrying my lacrosse stick and I'm going to shoot the ball.
And here's Bronwyn Schumacher, who played 4 years of NCAA Division III lacrosse at Oberlin College before she graduated.
I got to see all of these different women that had different types of bodies and yet were able to do so many different things. Understanding that, like, different bodies are still capable of doing amazing things on the field and in the weight room helped me realize that, like, that our bodies are machines. It's not just about what they look like. And that really helped me love my own body.
Schumacher told us that at the collegiate level, there's much less pressure than there is for professional athletes. But she discovered a personal limit to how much she wanted her body to be a tool on the lacrosse field.
When we started doing intense weight training, I dropped some weight. And I knew that I was a little excited about it. But my coach was saying, like, oh, you're too skinny. Like, you're not bulky enough. You're going to get knocked over too easily. You need to gain 10 pounds. But then when I eventually did do that, now I'm 10 pounds heavier, I find myself, like, wishing that I were the skinnier, lither version of myself.
Bronwyn told us it's sometimes more comfortable on the field with other athletes than on the street, where women have to compete with every idealized model on every magazine cover and in every store window.
Female athlete bodies are normalized in an athletic sphere because everybody's like them, but once you put them in contact with the rest of the world, your quads are just really big and like your arms are just like really big.
Do female athletes feel this pressure more keenly than men? Are women forced to worry about giving up their looks to have a successful sports career? From New Jersey, we heard an adamant yes, absolutely. Women athletes show any amount of what some members of our society call masculine muscles, and they are looking like men, and God forbid they gain any amount of weight. They are called all sorts of insulting names, yet haven't they ever seen half of the pro football or baseball players? They have big guts, they can't run for beans, but there is no mention of that whatsoever. Complete gender discrimination. I'm so sick of it, I almost block it out completely. This is not just a man's world anymore, but they keep trying.
This is Kathy from Dallas.
This is Robert calling from Miami.
Zach Rouse in Portland, Oregon.
Hi, my name is Denise, and I'm calling from Seneca, South Carolina.
Of course, female athletes are expected to be attractive in the standards. If she wears short hair, has a muscular build, and wears no makeup, there's an assumption that she's a lesbian.
But not because they are athletes. It's because they are women.
Women are brutal with each other. Men are generally very impressed with superior athletes, regardless of gender. At least I am.
So if a male athlete is really good looking, am I to assume that he's gay?
Being buff is part of male attractiveness.
It's a double standard.
Women are valued more for being petite, soft, delicate, even fragile.
A double standard for sure.
There was a recent photo spread done. The woman is an Olympic hammer thrower. The pictures were just gorgeous of her. And the best part about it is there's someone that we can point at and say, this is an Olympic athlete, and she looks like me.
Me? I'd take Serena Williams over, say, Sarah Jessica Parker any day of the week.
Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or find us on Twitter at The Takeaway. This conversation continues in just a moment.
Support for The Takeaway comes from TIAA CREF, a financial services company helping to create financial outcomes that matter. Learn more at TIAA.org. From LegalZoom, for over 10 years working to help Americans navigate the legal system, with assistance on business formations, wills and trusts, trademark registration, and patents, legal help is at LegalZoom.com. And Lumosity.com. Introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving. With brain games to calculate baseline scores and build a personalized brain training program, performance can be compared to global averages. Learn more at Lumosity.com.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.